In 1970, a revolutionary text exploded into public consciousness, challenging everything society thought it knew about femininity. This wasn't just another academic treatise. It was a cultural earthquake that sold over a million copies and transformed our understanding of gender. The fundamental premise was both simple and radical. Women's liberation requires not just political reform, but a complete reimagining of female sexuality and identity. The female eunuch, a woman castrated of her natural energy and passion, must reclaim her authentic self to achieve true freedom. This manifesto sparked fierce debates on television, in universities, and in households worldwide. Why? Because it dared to suggest that despite apparent progress, women remained fundamentally unfree, trapped in roles that denied their authentic selves. The most threatening aspect wasn't its political demands, but its insistence that true liberation begins with reclaiming female sexuality and energy from a culture that had systematically suppressed it. What if feminine traits are cultural inventions rather than natural? We base an entire gender system on a single chromosomal difference, despite evidence that females are constitutionally stronger, living longer with lower mortality rates, yet society portrays them as the weaker sex. Our bodies are shaped by social expectations. High heels change muscle torsion throughout the body, while support garments affect posture. What medical texts describe as naturally feminine skeletal features appear more pronounced in sedentary women than in working ones. Body hair becomes another battleground. Hairiness varies widely regardless of gender, yet women must remove it while men may cultivate it, stemming from associations of hairiness with aggressive sexuality that's encouraged in men but suppressed in women. Women's reproductive health continues to suffer from centuries of womb fear. Developers of oral contraceptives took years to discover widespread depression among users, while greater attention was paid to psychological effects of vasectomy on men. When it comes to bodies, the personal truly is political. Women's sexual organs were once described as the temple of Venus, with early gynecologists recognizing female sexual response as vigorous and active. Today, female sexuality has been reduced to passive reception of male skill, a stark departure from historical understanding. The permissive society has paradoxically neutralized sexual drives by containing them within clinical frameworks. Sexual liberation movements, while seemingly freeing women, have often created new performance anxieties. True liberation means recognizing that people are never more totally there than when they make love, rather than treating bodies as mechanical systems. For young girls, puberty becomes a source of shame. Unlike boys' genital activity, which is tacitly accepted, girls must be coy while suppressing desires. Their urges transform into passive fantasies, creating a disconnect between physical needs and permitted expression. Having been more controlled than her brother, the adolescent girl adopts feminine passivity and continues her own repression, perpetuating cycles of sexual disconnection into adulthood. What would sexuality look like if women reclaimed pleasure on their own terms? What happens to a woman's natural vitality in a society that fears female power? Energy doesn't disappear, but becomes diverted. In education and professional life, women often prioritize pleasing others over satisfying their own curiosity. By university age, their energy has been deflected into diligent note-taking without engagement, assisting rather than advancing. This suppression begins in childhood, when natural energy is treated as something to be civilized. Girls resist by becoming tomboys until puberty, proving themselves through traditionally masculine activities. The pattern varies. Some girls enjoy the benefits of being pretty, or learn the advantages of favored behavior, capitulating to the reward system, first with sweets and toys, then with clothing and eventually cosmetics. The chief instrument in perverting female energy isn't sexuality itself, but the insistence on a passive sexual role. Energy and sexuality are inseparable, what Freud and Jung called libido. For women, this energy becomes deformed through repression, while male energy transforms into aggression and competitiveness. When women seek psychological help, they face theories that locate problems within themselves rather than society. Psychiatry performs a confidence trick, convincing unhappy women they need changing, not social structures. The individual is simply easier to modify than the status quo. Freud admitted not understanding women. His theory portrays women as essentially castrated men, a tautological argument, neither provable nor disprovable. In this framework, women resisting their sexual role remain in penis envy, with masculine clitoral sexuality rather than mature vaginal response. Only pregnancy, supposedly, completes her. Helene Deutsch claimed intellectualization inhibits mature femininity. She portrayed the ideal woman as an unaggressive helpmate who adapts to men, renounces achievements without feeling sacrifice, and depends on a man, an artificial, unattainable ideal defined solely in relation to men. Despite decades of research attempting to establish mental differences between sexes, no significant distinctions have been confirmed. Perhaps women's unhappiness stems not from failing to adapt to their role, but from the role itself. Where body meets soul, the female stereotype emerges. More body than soul, more soul than mind. Woman becomes the showcase for wealth and status, adorned with treasures extracted from nature at great cost. While men adopted practical attire, women became displays of prosperity. Renaissance art gradually elevated the female form to predominance in art, increasingly disrobed yet adorned with jewelry. The stereotype persists in modern culture through the mousy secretary transformation trope. Women must appear expensive, well-groomed, and never repetitive in dress, demanding an arsenal of cosmetics, foundation garments, and hairstyling at considerable expense. This eternal feminine is the sexual object sought by all, yet possesses no sexuality herself. Her value exists only in the demand she excites. Her essential quality is castratedness, young, hairless, without sexual organ. Her expression must show no humor, curiosity, or intelligence, only hauteur, submission, or vacant happiness. What if women refused this role and defined beauty on their own terms? The path to freedom requires revolution, not reform. Women must reject marriage as a service contract benefiting men and challenge their consumer role through shared appliances, household cooperatives, and buying unbranded goods in bulk. Liberation means replacing compulsion with pleasure, cooking when desired rather than by schedule, and breaking the ideology of routine where work makes more work. As Mary Wollstonecraft wrote, "Independence, I have long considered the grand blessing of life, the basis of every virtue. Abandoning slavery means sacrificing the illusion of security." Women's liberation requires humanizing male sexuality rather than mocking it, bringing the cunt into its own and sharing sexual responsibility. Women should reject violence by refusing to reward its victors and withdrawing attention from male competition. Women suffer not from failing to become mature women, but from struggling against forces blocking their natural powers. The same dynamics binding women will destroy the world through male competitiveness. The revolution begins with women reclaiming their bodies, energy, sexuality, and joy. True freedom isn't granted, it's seized by those brave enough to live authentically. The female eunuch can be restored to wholeness, but only through her own actions.